For MePoultry.com, I'm Erica Schaefer, Digital Media Senior Editor. The coronavirus pandemic has left no corner of the U.S. food industry untouched, and meat processors have especially been hard hit. We've heard and read the stories of COVID-19 outbreaks among workers and the measures processors are taking to keep plants running and protect workers from infection. Specialty producers also have faced challenges brought on by the pandemic. Ask Jordan Beeman, president of Flatonia, Texas-based Heart Brand Beef, and he will describe the past 5 months as like living on a wave with plenty of ups and downs. But in the next breath, Beeman will say his company also has been fortunate. In this podcast, Beeman gives meat and poultry a view of the U.S. beef industry from the perspective of a specialty producer trying to navigate the choppy waters of a pandemic. Okay, so how about we start off with an update on the company? I mean, it's been a couple of years since Meat and Poultry is connected with anyone with Heart Brand. So what's been going on?
Yeah, so for us, we've just been trying to continue to grow the herd and continue to grow the beef sales. We've had some pretty good growth over the last few years and really poised for quite a bit of growth in 2020. So that's been our main focus, is just trying to get more Akushi bulls out to more commercial cattle producers so we can continue to grow our meat program. So I mean, I think that's the basic thing. We've added a few more new product lines. We've kind of ventured a little bit into some more processed meats. We've started doing like a cube steak, or in Texas we'd call it a chicken fried steak or a cutlet. We've got some sausage, our sausage, and it's been pretty successful, and then some jerkies and ventured into the, you know, just trying to find a way to continue to add as much value to each individual carcass as we can.
Mm-hmm. And so how big is the herd these days?
Yeah, about 17,000.
Oh, wow. That's huge.
Yeah. Yes, it's grown. It's grown quite a bit. That includes half bloods as well that are going to the meat program. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think has been the appeal of the Akashi beef? I mean, what's drawing your customers, do you think? What are the attributes?
Yeah, number one is eating experience. Mm-hmm. I think that's a far for sure number one. When people try it, they have a very tender, very flavorful, consistent beef eating experience. So once we are able to get someone to try it, and it does take a little bit to get someone to try it, because it takes effort or time or whatever you want to call it, to get people to spend more money for something that is still slightly similar. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. we're still selling beef here. It's not like we're selling something completely different. So they do have options. But once they try one of these Akushi steaks and they realize that flavor and that tenderness that comes from there, their resale, the repeat sale is very high. So I think just that people really enjoy the beef eating experience that comes from this beef.
Mm-hmm. And you've said, you know, you've managed to the company has managed to grow the herd. But overall, I wanted to jump onto our talking points now. What do you see as the current state of U.S. beef supplies?
Because I really live in a very small, you know, most of my time is spent in a pretty small amount of the U.S. beef supply. Mm-hmm. But how I look at the U.S. beef supply is, I really think that what's happened with it over the last 5 years, with the prime grade going from, you know, whatever number you want to pick, if you want to call it 2%, 4% mm-hmm. to 6 or 8%, kind of somewhere in there. So I just think that is a huge plus for the U.S. beef supply. I think that these cattle, you know, being backed up is not going to be good overall, but it is going to allow people to have more prime beef, to have more choice beef. So as Bill Fielding says it as well as anybody, that if we could get everybody in America a choice or better steak instead of a select or a standard no roll piece of meat, we're going to sell more meat. Mm-hmm. So I think or more beef specifically. So overall, as we're able to continue to increase the quality of beef that's put out by our entire U.S. beef supply, I think that is really going to help our overall demand of not just demand of people in the United States, but demand of people wanting U.S. beef in the entire world. So, you know, that's not exactly the U.S. beef supply, but I think just overall as a U.S. beef demand, I think it's going to be great as long as we continue to have this great product that we can continue to put out there. And, but just my overall feel for the U.S. beef supply is somehow we've got to keep these plants operating. And I think the major packers have done an extremely good job of that over the last 4 weeks, getting these slaughter numbers up to, what are they? They're bumping 90,000, 95,000 a day on just, on just fed steer and heifer. So if you'd asked me that at the end of May and 1st of June, I would have thought they'd have been lucky to get them to 80, 85 with the numbers that we were seeing and the talks of how these people at these plants were going to have to be spread apart. And then the numbers, these run weights, let's see what I get that CattleFacts text. I think there were 91,000 today and they've actually fallen off this week. But either way, I mean, we've gotten these beef slaughter numbers up to basically pre-COVID numbers, which so if we're able to keep these plants operating at, you know, 2019 levels, I mean, I think the beef supply is outstanding because the cattle supply is there.
So if that's what the ranching community can expect to see, you know, maybe more people enjoying higher grades of beef, what should they be doing to prepare for that?
Yeah, so I think the ranching community has got to realize that our customer, the end beef consumer, is going to demand a higher end product. That they're going to guess the customer gets more millennial or whatever that term would be, as the customer gets smarter, as they continue to watch the food channel, as they continue to have access to very highly marbled beef. Like even you go look at the common grocery store, they've really upped their beef game. I think the consumers got to realize that just making pounds of beef is not going to be good enough anymore. That eventually that I think a cow-calf supplier is going to need to be more aligned with a premium program. And whatever program that might be, whether it's just producing traditional type, which I hate to say is traditional, but now it's become, it is really mainstream, traditional CAB type meat, or if they're going to be producing, you know, something into an even higher end program, that I think that's where the cow-calf producer really has got to focus their time on, is producing quality beef and not just pounds of beef.
And so you said that you've been poised for more growth, and then of course we have the pandemic going on. So how has that impacted the company?
Yeah, it's been a slight roller coaster, might be a little too aggressive, but it's been I felt like I've lived on a wave, if you will.
Okay.
You know, it's a lot of ups and downs, but what's really unique about us is that we already own the cattle. So even before March, when we realized all this was happening, we already had the cattle allocated. So the growth was going to be there whether or not, I mean, the cattle were there. So we had to do something with them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of in April, it looked pretty bleak, you know, kind of, if you want to pick the second week of April.
Okay.
When the restaurants were shut down and things like that was pretty tough. And then May and June have been on this really wild ride for the beef folks. And luckily we've been able to stay at pretty good numbers. And even in June, picked up our production and able to work through some of that backlog. And we're fortunate enough to get a lot of that beef sold. So, which don't know what July is going to bring for us yet. So we just look to see where we're going to be on that wave. But we found some good retail customers. Luckily, my dad's been in this meat business for, he says, his entire adult life. So I guess it's 40 something years. So he has some really good contacts, and then retail type people. We've historically been over half food service based, had a little retail, but we put a lot more emphasis on our retail business. And with less people eating out and having less, and just in general, people having less to do, we found that people are wanting to spend more time, not just eating, but spend more time cooking. You know, people are looking for something to pass their time. at least they were a lot kind of in early June, and then we kind of opened up a little bit in late June, and now July we might be going back to a little bit more of closed down. I guess it's still yet to be seen for the entire country, but it sure seems like we're getting a little more closed down. So people aren't just thinking about what they're going to eat. They're thinking about how they're going to cook it. They're thinking about spending time on the barbecue pit and thinking more about the food and the experience, which has kind of led to a play in of us a little bit. Cause I've had more of my friends reach out to me wanting something unique or something fun to cook or to cook it on their actual charcoal grill, where before they just used to use a gas grill cause it heated up in 15 minutes, but now they have enough time to use their charcoal grill to take an hour to heat it. So I think that's what's been a pretty big change, is just how people are eating, and not just eating, but how they're cooking.
So I wanted to move on to the food service and restaurant segment because those folks have really been hard hit by this pandemic. What should they be asking of their suppliers? And especially, I mean, and what should suppliers be looking at in terms of the viability of the food service restaurant segment, the viability of that segment?
Yeah. So what's so crazy in this business that we operate in, I don't think very many food service operators have a relationship with their beef supplier, or for that matter, their supplier of very much of anything, unless they're a large corporate or something and have a big buying group that has somebody that manages some of those relationships for them. But I think most people, most especially the independent or the street business out there in the food service world, the only person they really have a relationship with is their sales rep, which would be their sales rep that worked for a major big box distributor. So I don't think they have that much, I don't think they have that much opportunity even to ask their supplier, the actual beef supplier, because so much of the beef is supplied by the big four, and they don't have a direct relationship with them. But I think the questions that restaurants are asking us, they really haven't changed a whole lot. I mean, they want to know, can you supply me product on a consistent basis? Is it possible to get a consistent pricing for this product? And how can you let me know that this product is going to be, they don't ask about safety of the product, because that's pretty well a given by most people. We're very fortunate to have the best meat supply in the entire world, so people have that's a given in what they ask for. But then how can you they the next thing they ask is, how is it going to be natural? How are you going to be sustainable? How is it going to be healthy? Or how am I going to market it? That's the things that they ask when I talk to them, it seems like.
The July edition of Meat and Poultry Magazine is now available in print and digital editions. In this month's issue, features editor Bob Sims profiles Gary Malinke, Senior Vice President of Perdue Premium Meat Company and Meat and Poultry's Operations Executive of the Year. In our family business focus, editor Joel Cruz explores crisis management and the unique issues family-owned businesses must address in order to survive all types of scenarios, from decisions about future growth to dealing with the pandemic. And columnist Richard Alanis explains how COVID-19 created a wrinkle in the workers' compensation system. Check out these stories and more in the July issue of Meat and Poultry Magazine. And so, what do you think about direct sales to consumers? Is that something Heart Brand is doing?
It is, yeah. So we've had a website on Heart Brand where we sold direct to consumer from since we started, probably since 2006 or 2007. Catalog website, 1-800 number, all that type stuff, where we put it in a styrofoam box, put dry ice on it and some gel packs, and put it in a UPS truck and send it. So I do think that is a good avenue. Just what makes it so difficult is the shipping. There's just so much added cost in terms of the cost of UPS to ship that meat, because we can't ship it, well, within some reasons, but it's difficult for us to reach the large population centers ground. So we have to ship stuff air, and whenever we ship air, it just costs so much money. So, for the very high-end consumer, that price is not as important of a factor to them and wants the best product, I think it is pretty a pretty good way that they can shop in a way that they can get really, really good products. But whenever you have to put that shipping in there, it makes it hard for the average consumer to be able to accept that shipping cost.
And so how do you go about maybe guiding consumers more toward the value-added products that you're doing? You mentioned you have an entirely, you know, you've extended your line of products. What's the key to turning them on to those products?
Yeah, so those further, like the cutlets and the sausage and stuff, probably 95% of our business on that's food service. So so we sell that to food service distributors. We do a little bit on our, we sell a little of our sausage and jerky on our website, but not very much. Our products aren't exactly packed ideally for retail. They're packed in a larger sizes, so it makes it a little bit tougher for the website customer to utilize 5 pounds of sausage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So any thoughts about maybe transitioning more of that product to a more consumer-friendly size?
We are. Okay. We're looking at another service provider to help us make to make sausage in a probably 12 or 14 ounce package that would be much more convenient to the individual homeowner, or, you know, individual buyer. So some of it is, it's getting production for this stuff. It's really difficult to get started with a new label, with a new size and to get a plant to make you sample runs and mm-hmm. to just kind of start something new. I mean, the mm-hmm. overall, I don't know if you want to call it learning curve or starting curve to this is, the startup is kind of difficult.
That's the show for this week. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give it a like and leave us a review as it helps support the program. You can stay social with us by searching at Meat Poultry on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. While you're there, give us a like and a follow. And for more stories from the meat and poultry processing industry, head over to meatpoultry.com. I'm Erica Schaefer. Thanks for listening.